of the high roads to wealth in America has always been the acquisition and development of good, solid, income-producing real estate. In this session, we're going to talk about the key things you must know to survive, let alone succeed, as a real estate investor. Over the last 15 years, I've had the experience of being a real estate agent, a broker, and an investor, and I have bought, sold, developed, and leased more than $50 million worth of real estate in the United States, Canada, and Mexico. I've made a lot of money for myself and for others, and I hate to admit I've lost money making foolish decisions. I've also lost money making what appeared to be prudent decisions, but I got caught when economic conditions changed unexpectedly. The purpose of this session is to give you some valuable advice that you can use to generate profits more often than losses should you decide to pursue your fortune in real estate. It's based on my own experience and that of many, many real estate investors, developers, speculators, and millionaires. It will work if you will. There's probably no area of investment where more myths prevail about wealth and success than in the field of real estate. You'll hear people saying that 90% of all fortunes in America come from real estate, that they aren't making any more of it, that it is the surest route to financial dependence for the average person, and that you can buy it with no money out of your own pocket and have your tenants pay it off for you. These assertions are all partially true and partially false. Many fortunes in America are based on real estate, but that real estate was usually purchased with cash flow from another business producing valuable goods and services at a profit. These profits were then channeled into real estate as an investment. And it's also true that they aren't making any more of it. But it's also true that in many areas, real estate values are declining and have been declining for years. The fact that it is sometimes scarce doesn't mean that it's necessarily desirable, much less going up in value. It's also true that real estate ownership is one of the best ways to achieve financial independence for the average person. But in order to become a successful real estate investor, you're going to have to become very much above average in your knowledge and in your understanding of how the real estate market really works. It's also true that you can buy real estate with little or no money down and have your tenants pay it off for you. But this is a long, hard process which requires a tremendous amount of work and intelligent analysis on your part. The field of real estate is one of the most dynamic and competitive in the country, and the real estate industry includes some of the smartest, sharpest, most experienced business professionals anywhere. And every year, even in boom markets, these people, the experts, lose millions of dollars as a result of decisions and investments that turn out wrong. There's a joke about the two real estate developers who are sitting around talking about what they would do if they won $1 million in the lottery. The first one says, "Well, if I won $1 million, I'd probably buy a nice home, pay off my bills, take my wife for a trip around the world, spend some time in Hawaii, buy some nice clothes, and dine in fancy restaurants." He then asked the second real estate developer what he would do if he won $1 million. The second real estate developer thought for a while and said, "Well, I might do all the things you just mentioned, but then again, maybe I just go on investing in real estate until it's all gone." This little joke is only partially funny. Not long ago, I had a man in my office who had built an extremely successful toy company and then sold out to a major multinational firm for $35 million cash. Everyone told him that the best place for him to put his money was into real estate and real estate development, so that's what he did. He kept on doing it for 8 years until his money was all gone. And then he went back to work as a commission salesman, starting all over again. I have friends who have been real estate millionaires and real estate bankrupts, all in a period of less than 1 year. One of my friends, an extremely experienced real estate professional, went from $7 million net worth to $3 million in the hole in less than 18 months investing in real estate. So if someone suggests to you that it's easy to be successful in real estate, don't you believe it. One of the great truths of business and of life is that there's no such thing as a free, and there's no such thing as easy money. Nowhere in this entire course have I said it would be easy for you to achieve financial success, and this is equally, if not doubly true, in real estate. On the other hand, it certainly is possible for you to do well in real estate if you approach it as you would any other business. Here are the five basic requirements for you to succeed in real estate. First, sit down and write out clear, specific goals and put timelines on them. Set goals for the amount of money you plan to save and invest in real estate, and for the amount of real estate that you intend to purchase in the next 3, 5, and 10 years. Then, Set a schedule for yourself with deadlines on it. The very act of writing out a set of goals for yourself in real estate will make it much more likely that you achieve the success that you're aiming for. Second, write out a detailed plan of action listing everything that you're going to do, organized by time and priority. The combination of goals plus detailed plans will give you a blueprint for real estate accumulation that you can begin to follow on a day-to-day basis. Third, go to work to learn every detail of the real estate business, as we'll talk about in this session. Because the potential rewards are so high in real estate, they go to those who have done their homework and paid their dues. It's very important for you to become an expert at real estate before you begin investing your time and savings in real estate acquisition. Fourth, be prepared to back your plans with hard work, sacrifice, and persistence. Going into real estate is very much like starting a business. There's a tremendous amount that you have to learn and which you can only learn by experience. There will be ups and downs, successes and reverses, and you must be willing to persist patiently throughout, knowing that you will be successful in the end. And the fifth requirement for success in real estate is to resolve to get in for the long term, for a minimum of 10 to 20 years. That is, if you are serious about building up something lasting and worthwhile in real estate. Real estate investment is not something to jump into and out of. It is something that you step into very carefully while being prepared to hold on to it for a long time. A recent study on real estate investment concluded that many people buy real estate, hold it for a long time, and then they sell it just before it starts to rise rapidly in value. They become impatient when they hear other people tell stories of how quick or easy money was made by flipping real estate properties. They then sell what is an excellent property and put the money into something that may not be as good. And often, 1 or 2 years later, the piece of real estate that they sold increases in value by 3 or 5 or even 10 times. And this is especially true with regard to raw land. So let's begin with a definition of investment real estate in its simplest terms. Real estate is its future earning power. Let me repeat that. Real estate is nothing more and nothing less than its future earning power. The value of any piece of real estate is determined by the income that can be generated by that property when it's developed to its highest and best use from today onward into the indefinite future. The value of a home is the value that a person who desires to live in that home will pay for. The value of a rental property is determined by how much people will pay to rent that property. The value of a piece of agricultural land is determined by the quality, the quantity, and the value of the crops that can be raised on that land. There are millions of acres of land throughout the United States that will never have any value, such as desert land or swamp land, because this land cannot be developed to produce income or to satisfy specific human needs. A question that you always have to ask is, when and how will income or wealth be generated on or by this piece of property? The correct answer to that question tells you how much the property is worth today and how much it's likely to be worth in the future. There are vast areas of many large cities where property values are declining because growth and development have come and gone and will probably not return in your lifetime. Every day, men and women are selling homes and properties for less than they paid for them or are losing them to foreclosure because these properties have actually declined in earning power and therefore declined in value. Thousands of homeowners walk away from their homes each year because the value of those homes has declined to the point where the homes are not even worth the first mortgages that have been placed on them. Having said this as a warning, there are many things that you can learn and do, starting with very little money, to begin building your financial independence in real estate. If you have little money but lots of time, and if you sincerely desire to enter into the real estate field to purchase property as an owner and as an investor, the simplest way for you to start is by using the so-called Nickerson method. This is also called the buy 'em, fix 'em method. This is the buying homes that need work and fixing them up, thereby increasing their value. Here are the 6 steps you must follow to use this strategy successfully. Step 1, you do your market research and you look at houses until you find one that is underpriced relative to the neighborhood because it's run down and needs a lot of work. A house that is underpriced is one that is selling for 20% or more below what similar houses are selling for in the same area, based on the cost or sales price per square foot. Real estate agents call this type of house a handyman special, or sometimes they advertise it as a starter home needing TLC or tender loving care. For you, this type of a home could be what is called a sleeper. It can be more valuable than it appears on the outside. The second step is for you to purchase the house for the lowest possible cash down payment and get the seller to carry back a second mortgage or trust deed on the property. Your ideal purchase of investment real estate is always to get the very best price and terms. Price and terms are often more important than any other single factor. If you can get a low enough price and generous terms, you can make almost any property into a successful investment. The third step in the buy-em, fix-em method is for you to move into the house and begin working on it on the weekends to renovate it and refurbish it, doing all or most of the work yourself. Many husbands and wives have launched themselves toward financial independence by working together as a team to buy and fix up houses, approaching it as a family project. The fourth step is that when you've fixed up the house and yard so that it's attractive again, you can then do one of three things. You can, first, sell the house for more than you paid, take the profit from the sale, and buy another house to renovate. Or, two, you can rent out the house at a rate which covers your mortgage payments and perhaps gives you extra cash flow. Or, three, you can rent out the renovated house and then go to the bank and pay often for as much as you paid for it based on the higher earning power of the property when rented out to a tenant. For example, let's say that you bought a house for $100,000. You negotiated well, and you only had to pay $5 down. The bank would give you a first mortgage of 80%, or $80,000, and the seller would take back a second deed of trust in the amount of $15,000. You now own a $100,000 house with only a $5,000 investment. Then, you move into the house for 2 or 3 months, and you spend another $5,000 on fixing up the house. You then advertise, and you find a tenant who will pay you $1,200 a month in rent for this newly renovated home. You can then often go to the bank and apply for a new first mortgage in the amount of, let us say, $90,000, based on the rent that you are receiving. At normal interest rates, a $90,000 mortgage would cost approximately $900 per month to service. If the bank would agree to refinance and issue you a new first mortgage for $90,000, you would get back your $5,000 down payment and your $5,000 investment in repairs and renovation. You would, in effect, have no money of your own invested in the house at all. On top of that, if your tenant was paying you $1,200 per month, you would have a positive cash flow from that house of $300 per month with no money of your own in the deal. You could then use that positive cash flow to pay off the $15,000 second deed of trust. As you can see, if you did this once every 6 months over the next 10 years, you could end up with a cash flow of several $1,000s per month and a portfolio of investment properties in which you had little or no investment. This is the miracle working power of the buy-em, fix-em method. In step 5 of this method, you can then repeat this process with another house, again investing your sweat equity or your human capital in the work and renovation until you fixed it up and you're ready to sell, rent, or refinance the house once more. In step 6, as you increase your assets, your cash flow, and your experience, you move up to buying and fixing duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes, and eventually apartment buildings, which you'll learn about later in this session. The two main advantages of this buy-em, fix-em method are, first, you can do it while you keep your full-time job, continuing to generate cash flow from your job for repairs and renovation. And second, you can spend little or no money, little or no risk, and expand your activities as you gain more knowledge and experience. The one limitation of the buy-em, fix-em method, as I mentioned earlier, is that it takes an enormous amount of time to seek out and purchase the types of houses that are ideal for this process. But if you have lots of time and little money, this is where you can start toward financial independence. Now, let's talk about what is called buying real estate with no money down. There's no question that it's possible to buy real estate, especially older homes, with no money down. This is certainly true, but that doesn't mean that it's easy. What buying a house with no money down simply means is you find someone who is eager to sell his or her house and who is, therefore, willing to carry back a second mortgage on the property rather than to demand cash. A person who is eager to sell a property is called a motivated seller. And finding such a seller is usually the only way for you to buy real estate with little or no money of your own invested in a property. For example, a house might be for sale for $100,000, and let us say that you can qualify for a mortgage on the property. If the person selling the property will carry back a $20,000 second mortgage, then you can end up owning the house, subject to the mortgages and the payments, with no money out of your own pocket. If you could then turn around and rent out the house for an amount high enough to cover both mortgage payments and the taxes, and any future repairs, your tenants would eventually pay off the cost of the house and you would own it with no money down. This method requires that you achieve a monthly rental rate equal to approximately 1% or more of the purchase price of the house. For example, if the purchase price of the house was $100,000, you would have to get a rent of approximately $1,000 or 1% of $100,000 per month in order to service the debt on both mortgages. This strategy only works with lower because you can very rarely rent out a more expensive house for enough to cover all the payments. You'll want to look at houses in the $75,000 to $125,000 price range for this no money down purchase strategy. These are also the homes that sell the most rapidly and are the most easily rented in almost any market. If you didn't want to rent the house right away, or if the house was not yet suitable for renting, you could move in, make the payments while fixing up the house, and then you could either resell the house or rent it out for enough to earn a profit, or you could refinance the house based on its new cash flow from a new tenant paying a higher rent. Robert Allen, the famous real estate investment advisor, in his books Nothing Down and Creating Wealth, suggests that you aim to buy a minimum of one, or even better, two houses per year with minimum or zero down payments. He suggests that unless you have a lot of time, you buy a house that needs little or no work so that you can immediately turn around and rent it out when you take possession. Allen describes what he considers to be the ideal target property or investment-grade property for you to look at. It would be described as a three-bedroom, single-family, detached house or condominium that is located in a stable neighborhood within a five-mile radius of your own home that is priced at less than $75,000 and worth at least 10% more than your cost. You can buy with less than 10% down and with terms which allow you to rent the home out with no negative cash flow or balloon payments coming due in less than 5 years. Allen goes on to suggest that you only buy homes in the bottom end of the price pyramid. He says that's where all the demand is. Lower price properties are the easiest to rent, and they have the greatest potential for upward price movement. One of the basic rules of real estate is that you should only buy property that you can drive out and look at. The very worst real estate mistakes are made by people who buy property a long way from where they live. There are just as many real estate opportunities within driving distance of your home as there may be in another community or on the other side of the country. In looking for a house to purchase with little or no money down, there are five factors that you need to take into consideration. Factor one is the seller's motivation and flexibility. Does the seller want to sell the house in a hurry, and is the seller flexible enough to consider carrying back a second mortgage on the property? One successful real estate investor I know won't consider making an offer on a property until it's been on the market for at least 6 months, or until the owners have already moved away and are extremely anxious to sell. The second factor is the location, as we'll talk about later in greater detail. The third factor is the financing or the terms. If you can get a property with the right terms, you can pay a higher price. If a house is worth $90,000 and the seller is demanding the full price, this would not normally be a bargain. However, if the seller will carry back a note for the amount above the first mortgage for 5 years, with interest only, and a balloon payment after 5 years, this then becomes an attractive purchase opportunity. The fourth factor, of course, is the price. And you're looking for a bargain, that is, a house that the seller will part with for 90% or less of the going market price. The factor to take into consideration is the condition of the property. This is something that you must always confirm for yourself in detail, and again, I'll deal with this later on in this session. So, if you have a motivated and flexible seller with a house in a reasonably good neighborhood who is willing to carry back a second mortgage and sell the house at a reasonable price, and the house is in good condition, you have all the factors that you need to make a real estate purchase. The best strategy for you if you're going to get into buying and renting houses as a full or part-time occupation is to aim to buy one or two houses a year for the next 10 years. During this period of time, your tenants will be making all your payments. Except in the rarest of circumstances, you should never purchase an income-producing piece of property where the debt service is not covered by the rent. In other words, you should avoid negative cash flow at all costs. A negative cash flow causes more real estate entrepreneurs to go bankrupt than any other single factor. Where do you find homes to buy for no money down? Well, you look in the classified section of your newspaper. Look for homes that are for sale by owner. If a real estate agent gets involved in the sale of a house, often having to pay the real estate commission makes it impossible for the seller to give you the price and terms that you need to make the deal work. Just for practice, you can take your newspaper any evening and begin phoning to those ads in the homes or condominiums for sale section which are for sale by owner. Ask the person who answers how much they want for the property and whether they would be willing to sell the property with a minimum or zero down payment. Often, if a person is motivated to sell for some reason, they'll accept any offer that enables them to get their full price. They'll even give you the house with no money down if you can assure them that you'll be able to make the payments that you commit to. Now, the pitfalls and the dangers in this system of buying real estate with no money down are basically as follows. First, if a house is priced reasonably in a normal market, the seller will not have to accept no money down. The seller can get cash to mortgage or refinance the house himself. Many people, when you talk to them about selling their houses with no money down, will laugh in your face and even hang up the phone. Don't worry. What you're looking for is a motivated seller, and you may have to kiss a lot of horny toads before you find the handsome prince. The second pitfall or danger in this strategy is that you must be able to generate sufficient income to make the payments on both mortgages, the first and the second, which the seller takes back, or the seller will have the right to step in and foreclose and take the house back from you. Many people who go out and find sellers willing to accept no money down end up losing both their money and their reputation when they're unable to keep up the payments. This is why it's so important for you to build up a cash reserve and never part with all your cash. The third pitfall or danger of buying real estate with no money down is that if you rent the house out to a tenant, the tenant had better be able to pay the rent or you'll have to come up with it or else lose the house. Also, your tenant must not do anything to damage the property or the value of the property will actually go down and you'll end up owing more than the house is worth. And renters do damage rental property. Sometimes they even destroy it. Thus, the importance of your selecting your tenants very, very carefully and doing a detailed check on their background references is essential. No references, no rental should be your rule. If you decide to embark on this kind of a program of real estate investment, you must take considerable care and do some research and analysis before making your investment decision. Here are four things that you'll have to learn in order to make money in real estate. First, you'll have to study the economics of the city and the neighborhood where you're thinking of investing. Some cities and some neighborhoods in some cities are in a state of decline. These are risky choices for real estate speculation. Other cities and certain parts of cities are stable or growing and are therefore good areas for investment. Second, you'll have to learn about the various factors that make a property valuable in a specific area. Why is one house more desirable than another? With experience, you'll be able to drive down the street and pick out houses that are excellent investment opportunities. Third, you'll have to learn how to evaluate and appraise real estate in order to be able to determine what kind of a price you can afford to pay. And fourth, you'll have to learn how to negotiate and how to sell people on the idea of dealing with you, especially the idea of giving you an excellent price or excellent terms or both. So let's start off with urban or city economics. What makes one city a better bet for real estate investment than another? Hold on to your seat. Here are 10 factors for you to consider when choosing a city to invest in. First, is the general level of business activity nationally? Nationwide recessions and depressions hurt all real estate everywhere. Almost invariably, nationwide recessions are triggered by rising interest rates. No matter where you are in the country, when interest rates go up, real estate values are hurt. So one of the questions you have to ask is, what is the overall national economy like today? and what do I think it's going to be like in the next few years? Second, you need to examine the level of local business activity. This is often more important than the status of the economic condition of the nation as a whole, because there are always cities, states, and regions that are growing while other parts of the country are stagnant or declining. Perhaps the most important specifics for you to pay attention to are the number of business startups and the growth rate of the local economy, especially the unemployment rate. An area that is strong has a business startup rate equal to 3 or 4% of the total number of businesses in the region. It will also have unemployment rates lower than those of the national economy. The third factor to consider is the changes or potential changes in the employment and the income sources for the community. The question is, where are the jobs now, and where will the jobs come from in the future? Is business and industry moving in or out? Are government offices and departments expanding or contracting? The single factor that has the greatest impact on the economic health of a region and its real estate values is the number of productive jobs existing and being created in the area. Wherever there is strong job creation, you have a strong economy and strong real estate values. The fourth thing for you to consider when looking at any city are the trends in financing terms and interest rates in the area. Are the terms getting better or worse? Are interest rates rising or falling? How much will you have to pay as a down payment? What kind of terms can you get? What interest rates will you have to pay both on first mortgages and on second mortgages? In some cities and in some parts of some cities, the prices, terms, and interest rates can be more favorable than in other parts of the same community. The fifth factor for you to measure when considering investing in any city is the rate of population growth or decline. A basic rule in real estate says that real estate values increase at approximately double the rate of population growth. For example, if the population increases 3% in an area, real estate values for single-family homes will increase at approximately 6%. Another rule of thumb is that real estate values increase at approximately 3 times the rate of inflation. If inflation is 3% per annum, then real estate values should increase at the rate of 9% per annum. Real estate booms take place when you have both population increase and inflation taking place simultaneously. A 3% increase in population per annum and a 3% increase in inflation per annum will equal a total of a 16% increase in residential real estate prices per annum. We've seen these factors at work for several years in places such as Los Angeles, Seattle, Miami, Tampa, and San Diego. The sixth factor for you to evaluate is the changes in the tastes and preferences of home buyers. What kind of homes do people want now? What size? What layout? What kind of homes are they likely to want in the future? What are the trends in new home construction? Remember, you must think about any property that you're considering purchasing as though you were going to own it for the next 20 years. The future earning power of the property is what you're buying. You have to look at the property in terms of how it will measure up 5 or 10 years from now, in terms of customer tastes and preferences at that time. The seventh factor to evaluate in any community is the volume of building activity and construction cost levels, and the trends of those construction cost levels. How many new homes are being built each year relative to the absorption rate of new homes? The absorption rate is the number of new houses that are purchased for people to live in each year. If you have an absorption rate of 3,000 homes per year, and you have 3,000 homes being built, you will have a stable, if not rising, real estate market. But if you have a situation such as has happened in Phoenix, where there was an absorption rate of 8,000 homes per year and a construction rate of 12,000 to 15,000 homes per year, you're going to have strong downward pressures on both home prices and rental rates. Eventually, there will be a real estate recession. The eighth factor for you to consider in a city where you're thinking of buying a house as an investment is the vacancy rate. This is perhaps the single most important factor that influences real estate trends. When vacancy rates get below 5%, developers begin building more homes and apartments to satisfy the demand. When vacancy rates rise above 10%, developers stop building and landlords begin to lower their rental rates and increase incentives to attract tenants. Wherever you have high vacancy rates, you have a high negative factor that makes buying and renting residential real estate less desirable. The ninth factor is to look at the interrelationship between prices, rents, and construction costs. These are important to market conditions. In other words, when rents rise above a certain point, construction activity will tend to increase. When prices of real estate rise or fall above or below a certain point, construction of new residential accommodation will also decline or increase. You should familiarize yourself with these numbers and ratios so that you can be in a position to predict what's going to happen. Some years ago, I invested in a hotel in a small community. I foolishly entrusted this investment decision to my partners, all of whom were professionals in real estate. It seemed like a tremendous deal going in, but they had overlooked one important factor. The economy of the town was both seasonal and unpredictable. It was dependent on government spending to maintain high levels of employment, and economic activity was partially determined by the prices of natural resources as well. All at once, the government cut back its spending and the natural resource prices fell through the floor. The level of economic activity in the community dropped dramatically, and the hotel began sitting empty month after month. Not taking the time to evaluate these factors in advance cost me more than $100,000 in less than a year. I finally lost the hotel to foreclosure. Another relationship that you should study to keep an eye on your marketplace is the differences between the listing prices of homes and their final sales prices. In a strong market, houses will sell for between 90 and 100% of the asking price. In a weakening market, houses will begin to sell at between 80 and 90% of their asking prices. Even a 1% change in the average selling price compared with the asking price, either up or down, can be an indicator of the trend in the real estate market. If you can spot a trend before it gets going, you can make or save yourself a lot of money. The tenth factor to look at in any community is the volume of market activity that is reflected in the number of deeds recorded, the number of mortgages recorded, and the volume of foreclosures recorded at the city hall. All of this information is on public record and is available to you for the asking. The key is to compare the present level of market activity with previous levels, not only with previous years, but also with previous months. You want to be well aware of how long it takes to sell houses in different price ranges. For example, if you're looking for houses in the $75,000 to $125,000 price range, you should pay close attention to how many weeks or months it takes a house like this to sell on average after it comes on the market. If the selling time begins to stretch out to 3 or 4 months, you will be able to find more motivated buyers than if the selling time is only 2 weeks. And here's the rule for residential real estate investment. People pay for homes in direct proportion to how close those homes are to where they work. This also applies to apartments and office buildings. Since people spend one-third of their time at home and one-third of their time at work, they will pay a premium to be able to live with the two as close together as possible. Here's another rule. When jobs increase in a particular community, or wage levels increase in that community, or interest rates go down in that community, any of these or all three will cause housing prices and the demand for housing to go up. Your job is to be alert to the level of job growth, to how much those jobs are paying, and to the trend in interest rates. A very small bit of information can often be worth many thousands of dollars to you in buying residential real estate correctly. Here are the 7 key factors that give a city the power to grow and to enjoy increases in real estate value. Factor number 1 is the economic and political power to attract business and industry. There must be reasons for businesses to move there, to start up, and to invest and expand. Business growth leads to population growth, which leads to growth in real estate values. Economic power in a city can come from a major industry that requires a tremendous number of service industries around it, such as the Boeing Corporation in Seattle. Political power can be based on the ability to move federal or state government facilities to a particular area, as happens in states and cities that have powerful friends in Washington or in state capitals. The second factor that gives a city the power to grow is dynamic community leaders, aggressive politicians, and active entrepreneurs. What you're looking for is a city where the mayor and the council are pro-development, pro-business, and pro-free enterprise. The powerful people in the community should be strongly in favor of the community growing and prospering through economic growth and development. The third factor that gives a city the power to grow is a pool of labor, especially an educated professional labor force. This is considered the single most attractive factor that determines where new companies will locate their head offices or where they will expand. There seems to be a direct relationship between the percentage of colleges and universities in a city and the number of educated people in the workforce. Therefore, any city that has its fair share of colleges and universities is usually going to be a strong place to invest in residential real estate. The fourth factor that gives a city the power to grow is the ability to export more goods and services out of the city or region than are imported into the area. If you look upon a city as a small nation, this is called having a positive balance of payments. When a city has the ability to command income from beyond its borders or city limits, it starts to take in more money than it sends out. That extra money kept in the community will be reflected in higher real estate prices. The fifth factor is the ability to attract or generate new sources of income and employment, or new business formation. This is considered the number one variable in determining overall activity in a community. The average community loses approximately 8 to 10% of its jobs by natural attrition each year. Companies shut down, fold up, go broke, or move away. Because of this, the number of jobs lost, plus more besides, must be created each year in order for a city to continue to maintain a vibrant economy. The basic requirement is that there must be new business formation at the rate of 3 to 4% per annum. This means, for example, that if there are 100,000 businesses in the San Diego area, there must be new business formation of 3,000 to 4,000 new businesses per year for San Diego to maintain employment for its workforce and to continue growing. If the rate of new business formation falls below 3% per annum, the unemployment rate will start to go up and residential housing prices will start to soften or even decline. The sixth factor that gives a city the power to grow, and one of the most important factors to many people, is the quality of living conditions and lifestyle. People prefer to live in cities that have beautiful weather and excellent environmental conditions, such as beaches and mountains nearby. The quality of local government as well as tax levels in the community are also important. For example, the tax levels in Pima County, where Tucson, Arizona is located, are higher than the tax levels in Maricopa County, where Phoenix is located. For this reason, more businesses choose to locate in Phoenix than in Tucson, causing Tucson to continually fall below the level needed for new business formation. The primary reason why the Sun Belt areas of the Southeast and the Southwest are growing more rapidly than any other part of the country is because of the lifestyle considerations. People like to live where it's warm and sunny much of the year. In fact, as long as lifestyle is a major consideration, investing in residential real estate in the Sun Belt is a smart thing to do, if you pick the property intelligently. And here's another rule for real estate and economic decision-making that has changed my life twice and has made many people rich. The rule is this: you can make more money and more progress in 5 years in a dynamic, growing city or region than you could in 20 years in a dying city or even in a city that's leveled off, such as Chicago or Milwaukee. Earl Nightingale once told the story of a young man who sought advice from a very wealthy older man. He told the older man that he wanted very badly to become wealthy and asked him what he should do. The old man told him that it was easy to become wealthy. All he had to do was find a rapidly growing community and move there. Then, save at least 10% of everything he earned and carefully invest it in real estate around the edges of the growing city. If the young man were to do this in 20 years, he would be wealthy, as sure as he was alive. But, the young man replied, that would require that I move away from my family and friends and start over again. I can't do that. Then, said the older man, you really don't desire wealth as much as you say you do. The moral of the story is simple. There is nothing in the world that can stop you from becoming wealthy if you are willing to make the necessary sacrifices. But most people are not willing to make any sacrifices at all, much less the sacrifices that are necessary to achieve financial independence, especially in residential real estate.